Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. NVIDIA in focus. We're watching shares of the AI darling as CEO Jensen Huang take center stage at the company's GTC Developers Conference. We are bringing you all the headlines from the event and the trades in the AI stocks. Plus, bubbling higher. Shares of Pepsi seeing their best day since October 2022 after a big upgrade on Wall Street. What analysts think is giving this soda stock a little extra fizz. And later, Tesla shares revving up. Will new price hikes be enough to get the recently slumping stock out of its rut? We'll debate what is next for this EV maker. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Bono and Eisen, Karen Feinerman, Dan Athen, and Guy Adami. First to our big story today, you are looking live at NVIDIA's annual GTC Developer Conference. CEO Jensen Huang speaking right now. He has already announced new partnerships and unveiled a new GPU. Shares of NVIDIA had been up more than 5% earlier in the day, but closed up less than a percent. They are currently trading down by just a quarter of a percent. Christina Partsinevelis is at the conference in San Jose, joins us now with the very latest. Christina.
Well, NVIDIA CEO reiterating that we are just at the tipping point for AI, and all that means is that you're going to need bigger GPUs. So NVIDIA revealing its new generation artificial intelligence platform, keyword platform there, to run AI models. They're calling it Blackwell, and it comes with also the Blackwell BH200 GPU. So that's the graphics processing unit, the latest one that we've all been waiting to hear about. It's going to be four times the training performance of the H100, 25 times lower in energy use, and 30 times the inferencing power compared to the previous Hopper architecture, or the H100 chip that we've all talked about constantly. Inferencing, though, is a big driver. The fact that they're mentioning that, we know just in the last earnings call, inferencing contributed 40% of NVIDIA's data center revenue. So the fact that this chip is going to be even stronger with inferencing allows NVIDIA to maintain that lead. The Blackwell will also be manufactured by TSMC and set to be launched later this year. You have Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Oracle all selling access to this particular chip through their cloud services as well. We haven't received cost on this actual Blackwell chip. Usually at these types of events, NVIDIA doesn't reveal pricing. But keep in mind, the previous older H100 chip was anywhere between $25,000 to $40,000 per chip. And you need a lot of them to build your entire AI system. So it could cost anywhere up to $200,000. That was the older generation. So you can only imagine that this one will probably be a little bit more than that for a lot of companies if they can get their hands on it.
On the partnership front, we know that they've talked about partnerships so far with Ansys, Synopsys. We've seen those stocks pop on the mention of the companies. Christina, I'm wondering, have there been the cameo sort of star appearances yet from any CEOs or luminaries in the tech world?
Well, I was just told there's some celebs right next to me right now, but I'm not like Ashton Kutcher.
Swing that camera around, Christina.
There's security everywhere, and that's why my eyes darted while I was going live. But it's just a rumor so far, but they just happen to be right behind the camera. I haven't seen any CEOs just yet, but you mentioned Ansys, Synopsys, Cadence, mm-hmm. and then TSMC. TSMC is going to be making that new Blackwell chip, so we could start to hear more. Keep an eye out for Oracle as well, and Broadcom, and AMD, and a few others that may move soon.
All right, Christina, thank you. Christina Partsinevelis on the ground in San Jose. It's funny, we were listening to John Fort talking overtime about how the similarities between this event and Apple's event, and how when Apple launched a new product, it was sort of like this. Mm-hmm. And typically it was a sell the news kind of event. What'd you make of the stock action in today's session going into this event?
I'm glad you said that. So Blackwell is replacing Hopper, right? Mm-hmm. And as you know, Mel, because we watch it, Hopper is the sheriff in Stranger Things. And the price action has been really strange over the last couple weeks. Go back two Fridays ago, that reversal in NVIDIA, where it basically from peak to trough gave up almost $250 billion. And then today from peak to trough was probably close to $100 billion. I mean, to me, that's not an encouraging sign. Now, it's a great company, this new chip, four times more efficient. I get it. price action is everything. And over the last week and a half, when you see moves like that, mm-hmm. you absolutely have to take note.
You know, it's really interesting when you think about that comparison to those Apple events, and they were fabulous, right? There was always a whiz-bang new thing that a consumer could go out there and buy, and they could have it in their pocket. And it also happened in and around, I think it was 2012 or so. These events were just kicking off. I know that, you know, Tim Cook had just taken over. The company had started buying back their stock. So consumers were also buying the stock. They were buying the products and buying the stock. One of the biggest differences here is that most consumers don't have a clue what a GPU is. They don't understand what a I don't mean that in a condescending way, a data center and all this sort of stuff. This is a product that is powering something that they actually haven't even used that well yet because they're still hallucinating a lot of these things. So I just think it's kind of interesting. And then I bring it back to the company. I bring it back to their earnings and I bring it back to their sales. In my career, on any sort of scale, I've never seen a company go from $3.50 in earnings 2 years ago to $12 in earnings to a $24 expected earnings. And then you could do that as far as their sales from $25 billion to $50 billion to an expected $100 billion. It's never happened.
Are you saying that you don't think it's true? Or what
did, it did happen. It did. I mean, so what I'm saying is what comes this year, this is the one where it's up again, up 80% year over year after we've already seen up. So what I'm saying is that in the last 2.5 months, we've seen this company, this stock, double, okay, on expectations of all this stuff that we're just hearing about right now. All these names that don't mean anything to most consumers, right? And we don't know what their demand's going to be like for them when they finally come to market. We don't know what the margins are going to be. We don't know what the competition's going to be. I'm just saying, so I just think we're at a weird spot. A lot of you folks say, well, you said that to me 6 months ago. You said
right,
that to me.
Right. You could have said that a year ago.
Okay. And I've also said to you, what's happened here, we've never seen happen before. But if you're going to make that same bet right now, right here at $900, that it's going to continue to go that way, that's a bad bet.
But let's play the game that the competition is coming, that AMD is making a product, that Intel is making that product, that they're also offering software solutions, same as NVIDIA. NVIDIA has the lead at this point. You two are NVIDIA holders. So I'm curious what's your take? At what point do you start getting concerned that that competition is actually real and that share will actually, I mean, share is already going away from NVIDIA. It's just that NVIDIA still has a dominant share at this point.
True. But I think this is a situation where the pie is growing tremendously, right? There's room. I remember early on in Amazon's cloud business thinking, well, eventually there'll be competition. Okay, so that was years ago now, and the cloud business has just continued to grow and actually accelerated growing at various points. So I don't think that there will be no competition. I think there will. I'm sort of more curious about, all right, so now they have this all these embedded H100 GPUs, which were anywhere from $25,000, $44,000, I think, for some of them, maybe more. What are those worth now? Okay, so if you are, I'm wondering, if you're Meta and you own $8 billion. So these are however much. Do you mark those down? What happens to that? I don't know. Do they? I'm curious what happens to that before they get to these. Now, these may be wildly more efficient. I'm confused also by that 25 times more efficient. Does that mean they're 4% the power usage? Is that what that means? Or are they 25% less powered? I don't exactly understand. So there's, I mean, the other thing that I'm sort of intrigued by here is, aside from being a genius at this business, Jensen Huang is also a genius at being a CEO of a company that is in the middle of a huge wave and how to manage expectations and sort of how to manage the stock price, which is a very difficult thing to do. And the higher it goes, Dan, the harder that gets, of course, right? So he's done a masterful job so far. I am long. I'm staying long. I do think that we are still in the early innings of this story. There's a lot left to play out. I think that absolutely AMD, I'm long some AMD as well, which is actually more expensive. I do think they will have some share, but I do think the pie is just growing tremendously quickly.
Yeah, I would agree that the pie is growing. And Dan mentioned the fact that most consumers don't know what it is, but like a lot of the knock on the stock was that they had that consumer concentration. And what you're seeing is with these partnerships, them at least bolstering and addressing that issue. Additionally, I mean, I think a lot of the knock on the company going in was that, listen, when it comes to training these large language models, this is really the only show in town. But once we get an opportunity to kind of pivot away from them with inference, we're really going to see cutting into margins and diversification away from them. But you've seen 40% of their revenue last was inference. So the fact that they are starting to broaden out their revenue streams and become a bit more of a household name, not to mention the software. And to me, that's really where the moat is. That's really where the vertical stack is and why this company has expanded from, what was it, 22 times to now 35 times. So I'm with everyone in terms of, yes, expecting them to continue to grow at this rate. No, at some point, that's not going to happen. The question is, at what price? Okay, as I said before, I do expect there to be some consolidation in the name, but there are a lot of unknowns. None of us, we may not know what a GPU is. We also don't know what the overall target addressable market is or what this whole AI thing really is. And until we get more of a grasp on that, saying that we don't understand the opportunity, but that we do understand the risk, to me is really kind of like speaking out of one side of our mouth. So I'm willing to grasp the unknowns right now. As things stand, they are the axes, picks, and shovels, and now inference in this gold rush. And I think you stick there.
I mean, this is a developers' conference, right? They want people to develop their models and train their models on their software, on their hardware, on their software. They want to make it harder to switch. And that's sort of what, you know, to the comparison to Apple. I don't want to draw that out too much, but.
Good, you didn't like it?
That is, no.
Okay.
It was fine.
It was meh. Okay.
But that's the whole point.
So right? So that's their advantage, right? That's their probably 3 to 4 or 5 year advantage, head start with everybody else.
Sure.
But again, price action is important. And we outlined the price action over the last week and a half. And at some point, you're going to look at peak margins. And maybe this last quarter wasn't it, but 77% margin. And again, we've tried to do the math. Karen does it very well, but price to earnings, cheaper than AMD without question. Price to revenue, a lot more expensive than AMD without question. So at some point, they're sort of out-earning, they're out-kicking their coverage in terms of their revenue and in terms of their earnings, which means, in my opinion, that 77% is going to start to come down. Now, the question is that just a natural progression? Will the market give them sort of a pass on that? Or is that sort of the inflection point for the stock? It clearly has been, it's been heading the right direction. At some point, that 77% starts going down. That's when people get concerned. And that's been that's been true with technology and chips all since chips were started to be made and traded.
For more on what this could mean for AI, let's bring in ARK Invest chief futurist Brett Winton. Brett, good to have you with us. Have you heard anything out of Jensen Huang so far that, you know, changes your mind about the story?
No, but I mean, I think a lot of the panel covered the key issues here. It's clearly an amazing company. I think that there's a lot of demand for AI chips. We think that $14 trillion will be spent on AI software by 2030, and you're going to need trillions of dollars of AI chips per year to power that. And we underwrite that into the stock, and still it's a difficult valuation case to make over the course of the business cycle relative to other opportunities that are out there in the market.
Mm-hmm. How do you think about the sort of halo effect that spending on AI chips will have in terms of broader tech spending? Wedbush had an interesting figure saying that for every dollar they estimate is spent on H100 chips, there's $10 to $12 being spent on software and other sort of parts of the tech ecosystem that you need to make the AI chip work. So what is that sort of trajectory in your view?
Yeah, both on the kind of like powering ecosystem of mm-hmm. tooling to have AI chips work, and on the software that needs to be generating revenue on the back end to justify the capital investment in the AI chips. You know, we think the foundation model layer companies are really profoundly interesting. I think that that's probably a new emerging operating system for computation, and it puts a lot of the tech heavyweights at risk. There was news today that reportedly Google and Apple might team up for Apple to license Google's Gemini model. I think that's a sign that these companies actually don't get that this is a new operating system that's emerging. It's not a feature to layer on top of existing tech platforms.
Brett, it's Karen. Thanks for being on today. So it sounds like there are other names that you might like more than NVIDIA. Can you tell us what those are and why you like them?
Sure. On the private side, we think Anthropic and its AI model is supremely interesting, and that enterprises are scrambling to figure out how to deploy these things to generate productivity for their knowledge workers. Then on the public side, actually, Tesla is the most compelling AI story in the market. You're not being honest if you don't think that autonomous driving is not more likely to happen today than it was 2 years ago because of the advances in AI. And they have an amazing distribution network of all of their vehicles, and their business model transforms if they can turn kind of their autonomous robo-taxi software into a working commercializable product.
Along those lines, Brett, since you are a futurist, when you're thinking about future ways to play AI, you know, there was an analyst on this morning, and he had an interesting take on it. You know, when refrigeration was invented, it wasn't the refrigerator parts makers that became the winners in that all. It was Coca-Cola. So when you sort of apply that metaphor to this situation, what are those kinds of companies that you think down the road will benefit the most?
Well, I think there's a clear opportunity on the consumer side, and it's entertainment is going to be transformed by having hyper-compelling AI models that captivate our attention. So think of TikTok as the algorithmic feed, which Facebook or Meta has co-opted. Well, imagine generated media content and how compelling that will be for end users. And we think that Meta's open sourcing of its AI operating systems is actually an interesting angle that they'll be able to play to generate that really compelling consumer experience across their entire portfolio of apps.
Wow. Brett, thanks. Good to speak with you. Brett Winton of ARK, the chief futurist there.
They have junior futurists, too.
Is there a more junior? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Do you look in the
It's an interesting
term?
Job.
I don't know. when do we move from picks and shovels to the bigger picture? Because that's really the question. If enterprise is going to continue to spend on it, you want to see that there are gains, whether it be productivity gains, product gains.
Well, I mean, listen, I think most folks that we've had on over the last few months or so, I mean, Meta has been a universally liked name, how they are using generative AI to aid their own business, how they're basically monetizing the ads that is their business. And, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed in your Instagram search feed over the last week or two, you're starting to see Meta AI as part of the thing there. So it's working throughout the consumer sort of products there. And then you're also getting served better ads. And for the most part, I know that most people think that Instagram's pretty good on the ad front. So they're going to have better monetization. That's why that stock keeps working. I know it was one of your early picks, probably before NVIDIA and how to play Gen AI. And the one that continues to be disappointing was Google. Is, you know, and so ultimately, hopefully someday they're going to get it together. But right now, even with today's gains, it doesn't seem like that's a great validation because Apple, who has no strategy, is looking to them rather than an Anthropic or doing a deal with an OpenAI.
Listen, I think that when we kind of dig into this Apple Google possible partnership, the headline and the initial gut reaction is for us to say this probably is not good for Apple. And I had the same type of reaction. And then I thought about it. When I think about the distribution, when I think about the Apple Watch, when I think about kind of the GLP-1s and all the focus on fitness, I actually think in the long term, maybe a few generations down, they actually end up winning, again, because of distribution network and just because of just how ubiquitous that name is. And from an application standpoint, to me, I can see how having a real-time suggestion on what one should do to solve a certain problem that comes up in real time, that seems to come to mind for me.
Quickly, in the here and now, though, so much of the broader market is predicated clearly on the NASDAQ, more specifically on semiconductors, more specifically in NVIDIA, which is 27%, I think, of the SMH. And, you know, you can pull up an after-hours chart here in NVIDIA. I think it's trading about 865 or so. So if we came in today waiting for something, and this is at least at 8:17 at night, a sell-the-news event, then one has to think, okay, what does this mean for a broader market, which has been lower left to upper right for quite some time? So just keep your eye on the price action here, as we said earlier.
All right. Do not miss a CNBC exclusive interview with NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang tomorrow, 10:15 a.m. Eastern time on Squawk on the Street, and then with Jim Cramer on Mad Money at 6 p.m. Eastern. Coming up, a lot more on the AI race, how Apple and Alphabet could be coming together in the most unlikely of alliances, and what it will mean for the iPhone in your hand. We're on that next. Plus, crude, copper, and rates, oh my, all three ticking higher as investors await the Fed's next move. Why, our next guest says to prepare yourself ahead of this week's policy meeting. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Google could be on the verge of a deal to bring its Gemini AI engine to iPhones. Bloomberg reporting today that Apple and Google are in active talks to license Gemini for new software features coming to iPhones later this year. Sources also saying that Apple had recently held talks with OpenAI and has considered using its model. Google parent Alphabet up more than 4% for its best day since December, while Apple closed 0.5% higher. So it did give up the gains of about 1.5%+ during the session. I had your same take in terms of, wow, Apple can't get it together to have its own AI offering by the developers conference, which was widely expected.
Yeah, I mean, that was my initial visceral reaction, so to speak, right? Like, okay, so if all the major players have been investing here and allocating resources here, what has Apple been doing? And I think in the shorter intermediate term, that probably is what this stack's up to be. But again, I do think that they have the stack and distribution necessary to be able to take advantage in terms of the presence with consumers in the long run anyway. So I think perhaps it is a short-term headwind, but ultimately I think they're able to play through.
I'm sort of wondering why build it if we can buy it, right? We don't know how much it costs.
But they're not buying it.
We don't know what they're doing.
Right.
Actually.
Right. We don't know.
We don't know.
If Google's paying Apple.
So we don't know. So it is quite possible that this is just a more efficient way to do it.
Right.
And maybe that's the simplest explanation, not the right one. I don't know. But that's sort of what popped into my head. I mean, we always talk a lot about Apple just making whatever it is better, not first.
Right.
But they do it better.
True.
Well, think about this. It's probably an extension of this existing deal that they have for Safari on iOS devices, right? So basically, you know, Google pays Apple $20 billion a year, 36% of the search traffic that goes on Safari devices, largely on iOS devices. And you think about that. Okay, so right now, if you go to Google and you do a search and you, subscribe to Gemini, Gemini is powering that search the way OpenAI is powering the search on Bing or something like that. So it has the potential just to be a stopgap, to your point. You know what I mean? And an extension of the existing search deal. And it might be the sort of thing where maybe they're not spending a whole heck of a lot of money. It's interesting. I don't know if they can pull up a day chart of Apple right now. So this stock gapped up at 175 and it went a bit higher to 177.5, sold off. It literally flatlined at 175 all afternoon. And at the end of the day, it just dropped.
Yeah.
So whoever was buying that stock all day, it was kind of interesting action. So the fact that it closed on the low, opened on the high, not that encouraging for the way at least investors are thinking about this deal.
If the model is the current relationship, then this product, whatever it may be, I would think would be an Apple product to any consumer using this. And that therefore is a stamp of approval for the Gemini product, a vote of confidence that Google can actually get its act together, fix whatever needs fixing, and
tacit approval.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And talk about trading stocks again. So Google, I think, traded up to 152. So 153 and change. So let's call it 154, sort of the line in the sand. That was a prior high a couple of years ago. It was a prior high we just made seemingly a month and a half ago. You can do this one of two ways. You can do what Karen does and say, this is a value stock. I'm staying with it through hell or high water. That's been right. It's hanging in there. Or you could say, you know what? Price action wasn't great. I'm doing one of two things. I'm going to buy it on a breakout above 154, which sounds somewhat counterintuitive, or wait for the pullback, which we've been in the midst of. Because right here, to a certain extent, you're almost flipping a coin.
Yeah. I think we want to get back to Christina Partsinevelis with more from NVIDIA's GTC conference. Christina?
Well, one of the things we wanted to hear about is how they're going to monetize software, and NVIDIA just announcing that they are launching a new service. So it's an enterprise software subscription. It's called NIMS, which stands for NVIDIA Inferencing Microservice. And what that means is that you can take NVIDIA GPUs that you already own, and they will provide the extra software and allow companies to build large language models on said GPUs. So instead of using OpenAI, for example, you would turn to NIM. So you would buy the GPUs for a cost of anywhere between, let's say, $30 to $50,000, and then per GPU, The new cost will be $4,500 per GPU per year for a license. So again, this is a way to monetize software, a reoccurring source of revenue for NVIDIA on top of the hardware that they're already selling.
All right, Christina, thanks. Christina Partz Nevelis, a rebound of 1% here in the after hours on the back of this news. Recurring revenue. We're all worried about the pull forward, about, you know, over-ordering, et cetera, but this sort of addresses that problem.
Recurring revenue is why IBM years ago got that premium valuation, because they had visibility with the recurring revenue stream. So clearly that's a good thing, and that's another plus in terms of why you can wrap your head around this on valuation, and the stock is actually bouncing in kind on the back of that.
All right. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Prepping for Powell, oil, metals, and rates all on the move as investors await the Fed's next decision. What to expect out of the central bank's policy meeting. Plus, a carbonated call on Pepsi. Shares of the soda maker bubbling higher after a big bullish note on Wall Street. The fizz on this biz next. You're watching Fast Money live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks kicking the week off in the green, with the Dow jumping 75 points, the S&P up more than 0.5%, snapping a three-day losing streak, and the Nasdaq leading the gains up 0.8%. Some stocks hitting all-time highs in today's session: Chipotle, O'Reilly Automotive, Progressive, Caterpillar, and Waste Management, all trading near records. And shares of Boeing lower again today. A United Airlines flight landing in Oregon over the weekend without one of its fuselage panels. It went unnoticed until after the plane had landed, and it's unclear when or how it went missing. This is just the latest in Boeing's high-profile safety incidents. Not sure where you want to go here. I'll go to Guy.
Well, let's go to Boeing real quick. Okay. I think they report middle of April-ish. I mean, again, at 179, we talk about this. The sell-offs are there, clearly. A decent day again on the market, trades lower. But it's seemingly they're pushing against something now. I think they're pushing too much to the downside. So you get any incremental good news for Boeing, I think this thing is sort of a stock you want to trade from the long side. I said that at 185. I said that at 190. I'm saying it here at 179. But this is one that I think the push to the downside, now you're tempting fate, I think, if you're playing Boeing on the short side of things.
There's a desire of investors to sell, regardless of how old that plane is that has the issues. So it could be just a maintenance issue on the part of whatever airline is operating that plane and not a Boeing per se problem. But the reaction is still to sell. That's
it. Did it take off with the panel? Or I don't know.
Where is the panel? It should be somewhere.
Right? So that's kind of amazing. I kind of agree with you, though. I mean, if it stops going down, I mean, today was down a little bit, you know, keeps testing bad news and how much will it go down on it. I think you're right. Any whiff of good news, but I don't know when that'll be.
That's right.
Can we like divorce the stock and the company and what's going on here? Because there's hundreds, if not thousands, of stocks to trade and buy and this and that, whatever. And the news flow here just doesn't get any better. And you have to start thinking about like what has gone on with this company. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And is it broken? And is the culture broken? Yeah. That, you know what I mean? That got people to buy dips for 50 years. You know what I'm saying? So it's just kind of interesting to me. We spent a lot of time talking about this name. I think we should just take it off our pages and maybe stop talking about it. And maybe that's the reason why you should buy it. I don't know. But I'm going to say there's a lot of stocks to buy, trade, this, that, whatever. And this company seems like they are just not firing on all cylinders.
Okay, so before I take it off the page.
Yeah.
One last comment.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah, just one last go. I mean, listen, it's essentially a duopoly. So at some point, there is value. It's just at what point. And I'm with you. Once the news flow stops, that's when the negative news will stop. Because there has been very little to like about the performance of the planes or the stock. And I don't think you can decouple the two.
Yeah. Coming up, to cut or not to cut, investors are awaiting Powell and the central bank's next move on rates. But our next guest says, do not get too excited. The Fed may not cut rates at all this year. Jim Bianco joins us next to lay out what he is seeing and why the Fed may be on hold much longer than markets hope. More on that when Fast Money returns.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Commodities climbing higher this year. Crude oil prices surging today, climbing back above $82 a barrel, their highest level since last November. Iraq and Saudi Arabia both planning to cut exports even as demand from the U.S. and China grows. Copper also continuing its climb higher. The industrial metal up more than 6% this year, bringing copper miners along with it. Meantime, rates also on the rise. This week marks 2 years since the current Fed tightening cycle began. And the 10-year today is trading near the highest levels of the year. I feel like we should have had a cake or something like that to mark that anniversary.
Cakes are fun. I'm not a big cake. Do you like cake?
I feel like you're a pie person.
Pie.
Anyway.
Warm apple pie.
With a la mode. Anyway, can we get to the...
Yeah, we can. Throw up an OIH chart going back to 2020. I mean, it's been lower left, upper right, a series of higher highs, higher lows. Here we are at 325, and we talked about the refiners last week as well. Those stocks seemingly off to the races. That's one side of the equation. Copper is the other side of the equation, probably the second or third most important commodity out there, absolutely breaking out to the upside. Throw up a Freeport-McMoRan chart, FCX, you'll see. If we can close above 45, we're through resistance we've had a couple of years now, so... Energy's in play, resources clearly in play. Fed job gets more and more difficult with each passing day.
Yeah, so according to this picture, inflation is not abating, at least in this space.
Right, so many spaces. I don't see, I think we're down from what, maybe three cuts to two? I don't even know that two is, why necessarily two? I mean, for a long time we've been saying, why do they need to sort of give it away? And then as we get closer to the election, then they're sort of hamstrung. If they do nothing, is that political? If they do something, is that political? I don't really know. But I think that the expectation of a June cut just because it would be the last chance to do something that isn't political, I don't really buy that, actually.
Yeah. Is that a lot of hope in your view, Bonawin?
Yes, but I think the markets have been trading with a lot of hope for the better part of a year. Yeah. Even when the Fed was telling them, we are not going to cut, they were expecting cuts or pauses or, I mean, I can't even keep up with all of the acronyms for like what's been out there in terms of flying in the face of what the Fed has been delivering. And the last PPI and CPI numbers really don't tell you a story of us getting inflation at least to a target level where the Fed would be comfortable, dare I say, responsible cutting. Growth is still there. Employment is still there. I don't really see the reason why you need to, aside from the fact that they did signal to an extent in the last conference. But outside of that, I don't really see the logic behind the cut.
For more on inflation, rates, and the Fed, let's bring in Jim Bianco. He runs Bianco Research, and you don't believe we're going to see cuts this year. Why?
The economy's too strong right now. It's in a no-landing phase, as we like to call it. It's not a Boeing plane. There's no parts falling off of it. And it's just continuing to move along at probably a 2.5% or 3% phase. Along with that, consumers are spending more money, and it looks like we're probably bottoming on inflation at around 3%. Now, I don't think we go much beyond 4 at the most, but that's not 2. And the Fed has made it very clear that they need confidence we're going to 2, and we're not getting that. And otherwise, they're not going to be cutting rates. So that's why I think they're going to hold. And finally, I'm in the camp that the Fed doesn't change policy in the summer of an election year. Change policy. If they were in cutting mode, they could continue to cut, but they're in hold mode. And if they don't pull the trigger by June, then it's November, December at the earliest, only if the data warrants it. And right now, the data is not warranting it.
Jim, you're one of the we both agree that rates are going higher. We've proven correct over the last couple of weeks. We'll see how it plays out. But what's the catalyst, in your opinion, for rates to continue to go higher in 10-year from 4.30, let's say, to 4.75, which is obviously the next level, in my opinion?
Yeah, and I think that they might even go higher. I think it's going to be the reality of inflation. If we're in a 3 to 4% inflation world, which is what I think we are, then a 4.30 10-year note is not enough, if you will, compensation for that. It's got to go higher. I think the yield curve steepens. I think that we eventually start to maybe draw a bead on where the funds rate is at 5.25 to 5.5, and maybe even see the curve start heading towards a zero curve. So yeah, I'm talking about the 10-year going over 5 as the funds rate stays at 5.25 to 5.5. I don't think that that is a consensus view right now in the marketplace. We were almost there in October, so it's not much more than where we were in October. And when we were at 5% in October, we were throwing up 3% growth rates in the economy, and it was able to handle that level of interest rates just fine.
Jim, so you mentioned the domestic issues that might lead to higher rates. Can you speak to the Japan carry trade and perhaps them pivoting on monetary policy and what effects that might have on rates as well?
Yeah, so it's a long time in coming. They're probably in a couple hours going to, you know, raise rates for the first time in 17 years. And they're going to probably finally get off of zero or off of negative rates and go to zero and be the last country to actually have a negative rate. It's well earned because they finally got inflation above 2% in Japan. And you're right. If you look at a chart of the yen dollar exchange rate overlaid with the 10-year yield, it's effectively the same thing because so much of the financing of 10-year notes comes from Japan and their low rates. Now, if interest rates are heading up in Japan, then a lot of Japanese players that are playing that trade will say, I'll just leave my interest rate, I'll just leave my bonds or my investments in Japan, get the higher yield in Japan, and not take the carry risk. And Japan is the largest owner of treasuries in the world. And if they're not going to start waning, it's just another problem for the treasury market that could push yields higher.
Jim, great to see you. Thank you. Jim Bianco of Bianco Research. What happens if there are no cuts this year to equities, Dan?
Well, I mean, listen, I would have thought by now, like when the market took off in mid-December, it was because basically they were pricing in or the Fed indicated that they were going to be cutting in 2024 and market participants started pricing in 5-6 cuts. And it just seemed warranted in a way, right? So now here we are in a scenario where we're maybe down to 2. Maybe they get into some kind of weird situation this summer or into the fall where they can't cut. And I guess if the economy keeps humming along, if we don't have unemployment above 4%, if inflation, let's just say, has stopped going down but is not going up meaningfully, if things geopolitically slow down a little bit, if crude oil, fine, it's at 82, but it doesn't go to 90. You know what I mean? Like, I can see a scenario where maybe they don't have to and real rates are okay and the economy's doing okay and maybe risk asset. Your question was about stocks. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Sooner or later, they're going to start looking ahead and saying, what will be the reason? We will ultimately have a slowdown. That recession, remember, that we were pricing in late 2022 for last year, ultimately will be that much closer, and then stocks will have to price it, but I don't know when.
So try to think about what will do well in a higher for longer environment. And I think if you look at sort of a J.P. Morgan versus a regional bank, I would think that J.P. Morgan would do a lot better. I think, you know, for commercial real estate, this is a really tough situation. Extended long rates is hard.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Now we talk about it, the Fed not being subject to political pressure. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders sending a note to Jerome Powell, I think, or some open letter saying we need a rate cut and we need it soon,
right,
which shows a complete lack of understanding what's going on. But it doesn't matter because now this has become a bit of a political football. So this rhetoric's just going to get louder and louder. Again, be careful what you wish for in the form of rate cuts. I think the best case scenario this year, 1, maybe 2. And if you get that, it means things are actually going pretty well.
Coming up, cola and ketamine. First shares of Pepsi getting a pop after a bullish call out of Morgan Stanley. Why analysts are feeling the fizz ahead. And Tesla topping the tape today. The price hikes helping boost that stock. And how Elon Musk is defending his prescription ketamine use as being good for investors. The details on that when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money, a call of the day on PepsiCo. Morgan Stanley upgrading the stock to an overweight from equal weight, naming it a top pick. Analysts writing that they see a clear inflection ahead after the stock's bottoms out in Q1. That call sending shares up 4% for Pepsi's best day since October 2022.
So a chart up on this one, if you can. Look at the September low and look at the low we just traded down to. Again, technically, we held a really important level. Now we're moving 20 times next year's numbers, maybe you got 11% EPS growth, maybe high single digits earnings growth. I think given the sell-off we saw since this time last year, this stock might get back on its horse, especially if some of these high flyers are going to give a little bit back. The market will find its way into names like Pepsi.
What do you think, Bonwin?
You know, I think a 4% move on a relatively low beta name lets you know where we are in terms of the market possibly being a bit overextended, seeing, you know, like a rotation back in there. And I really think ultimately it speaks to the real power of the GLPNs. We were talking about it a little bit earlier in terms of the bottoming out of this business. And I think you kind of trade this as a counter trend. But in terms of, like, unless you're going to hold this name for long terms, and I'm talking about 5+ years, I think you will find other pockets of the market that just give you a bit more volatility and juice in terms of trading short term.
Do you think the price of Doritos goes down if the input costs come down?
No.
if transportation costs come down? Yeah, exactly.
Yes, a little.
Maybe.
But not as much.
Yeah.
And remember, all raw materials aren't their only costs.
They're labor.
Right? But on the upside, when those raw material costs go up, they're like, okay, we'll do 100% raise consistent with that inflation. Not on the downside.
There's no limit to what people will pay for their Doritos.
And once you've conditioned, I mean, once you're at a certain price point for a certain period of time, you've conditioned
people. $7.99 a bag is no big deal. It's highway robbery.
That's how much a bag of Doritos is?
No, you said it like you know.
I think it's $6.29 on Amazon Fresh.
Of course it is.
Not like the giant size, like, you know. Anyway, coming up, Tesla shares jumping over 6% after the EV company announced price hikes for its Model Y. What CEO Elon Musk had to say about the state of the company and some of his extracurricular activities. Next. And here's a sneak peek at the Cramer Cam. Jim is chatting exclusively with the CEO of CrowdStrike. Catch the full interview top of the hour on Mad Money. More Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Tesla shares topping the tape after the company announced more price hikes on its Model Y electric vehicle. Prices in some European countries will go up by 2,000 euros effective on Friday. Separately, former CNN anchor Don Lemon releasing his wide-ranging interview with Musk on social media platform X today, where he discussed his prescription ketamine use.
Now, Tesla is worth about as much as the rest of the car industry combined from nothing. So, I know. That's pretty good. As I mentioned, we had the best-selling car on Earth last year. So for an investor standpoint, if there is something I'm taking, I should keep taking it.
Tesla shares down about 30% year-to-date. So are these price hikes what turns the stock around? Is it a position of strength, position of weakness? These price hikes are being implemented. And should we care if the if the company is doing okay, do we care what the CEO does?
I don't care what he does, but I'll say this. You know, last week we talked about you're looking for a place to buy the stock, not sell it. And we thought in the form of last April's low, like 161 or so, made sense. I think the Friday low is 162 and change. So, you know, this stock gave you an opportunity to trade something. Now what are you looking at? Well, you can trade it from the long side against that level. And that's sort of how this thing works. You know, Dan says all the time, at certain points, you're no longer pressing shorts. You're looking for opportunity. You probably got it last week in Tesla.
Yeah, and you said that last week, and I think that was really smart. I mean, at the point that the street had come around to like a low level of Q1 deliveries, right? Mm-hmm. So they finally got down from like a 485,000 consensus to something that's now under 430. The one thing I'll just say is that what the company really got wrong over the last year is this notion of price elasticity, that if they lowered the prices, there would be increased demand. It didn't come. So I'm not sure raising the prices is going to do the thing that they hope to do, at least change the narrative for a day, which was today.
Right. Or it could send the signal, you know, buy now. And so you can see that little bump that they might need to meet that delivery number.
Right. But that's saying they need that. Right. I mean, you're saying it comes from a place of weakness. It's a kind of surprising, but I don't know.
You see VIN registrations, you see the demand, you see the wait times. If it doesn't happen, you know what I mean? Then they're going to have to change course. That might be a lot more negative than this was positive.
Well, they don't mind changing course.
They haven't done a price hike in a very long time.
It's better than slashing prices.
Which they have been doing
continuously, to Dan's point, and it's not led to demand. At least here, they're putting a line in the sand and saying we're going to defend our margins. We'll see how long that lasts, but I think it's at least a pivot from what they've been doing, which has been a negative signaling effect, and the stock has traded down as a result.
From a corporate governance perspective, Karen, should we care what he does there's key man risk, obviously, I would think,
right,
to Elon Musk and the Tesla story.
Is there key man insurance? I can't imagine there would be enough for what would happen to the stock if somebody were to happen to Elon. Should we care? I don't really. I think some of the other, to me, the huge, huge divergence of his attention to X is far worse. And then the idea of, I'm going to take AI assets or those kind of things, far, far worse than this.
Right. Up next, final trades.
And third, these NIMs are going to help.
Moments ago, there were robots on the NVIDIA stage in San Jose. Two robots, in fact, one named Orange and one named Green. There you have Jensen Huang. This is his second hour. There it is. Maybe that's Orange since it has Orange.
Wait, that's a guy from WALL-E.
We'll find out. Final trade time, Bono in.
Speaking of not pressing shorts into an extreme down tape, Zillow, look for an entry point.
Karen.
Yes. Tomorrow's day three, Ulta. Those weren't bad earnings. Time to buy.
Dan.
Yeah, happy anniversary to the luckiest woman in the world. My wife. How about that? Rivian. Here.
Silence.
Some would argue. Freeport Mac, Moran, Mel.
All right. Thanks for watching Fast. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more. Meantime, Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.